Well, next hour, we're going live to the United Kingdom for some strange stories. But this hour, we'll take your calls with Bradley Birkenfeld as we talk about his latest book, Lucifer's Banker. He was the whistleblower that stopped some, not all, but stopped some wealthy Americans from committing billions in tax fraud, and corporations as well. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Bradley Birkenfeld with us. His book, Lucifer's Banker, will take your calls this hour. Bradley, money aside, would you do this all over again?
I would, George. I wouldn't go to the Department of Justice, though. I certainly would have gone to the IRS initially and been a confidential informant. So I think the real lesson here is that why is it that the Department of Justice was so hostile towards me? And that's really the lesson in this whole business. And I think it's unfortunate because the American taxpayers have been ripped off by their own government.
Do you think some of this hidden money went to terrorists?
I know it did. If you go back and if you read my book, I would recommend your organization and your audience. And I'm not just trying to promote my book, but
I
think it's very informative. You'll see that there's two people in particular in this book that are mentioned. And I think you'll see that the information that I have put in there justifies that they were not only breaking the law, but they were violating many sanctions with respect to oil sales to the Saddam Hussein regime.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave this information to the DOJ, and they weren't interested. They told me they weren't interested in non-Americans, quote unquote. Kevin Downing of the Department of Justice told me he was not interested in non-Americans. And I said, well, UBS is run by non-Americans. The people who flew the planes into the buildings in New York City were non-Americans. How do you make such a ridiculous statement like that? But that's it goes with the territory of the DOJ.
When the scam started, and again, as you said, it started off intentionally to be legitimate. But when it got out of hand, what do you think was the catalyst for that?
Well, again, I think when you look at the globalization business, people were doing trade across countries, cross-border trade and so forth, and technology made it easier to do business, whether it was oil or commodities or what have you. Then people started to put monies away where they were doing business. It made sense. You had different currencies, you had different cultures, you had different tax treaties and so forth. So Switzerland, which was politically stable, economically stable, was a very conducive place to put your money. On top of all the other effects of being in Switzerland, meaning gourmet cuisine, clean, safe, and beautiful. So people said, well, this is a wonderful spot to put our money and go there for a holiday or buy a chalet or what have you. So it tells something about the country which was never successfully invaded throughout their history. From 1291, they've never been successfully invaded, ever.
Wow, that's true. That is true.
If you look at every country around them, they were. So it says something about the people's mentality. And even the history of the dealings with the Nazis, the Third Reich, the Swiss are guilty of that. And we saw that recently back in the late 90s when the World Jewish Congress forced them to make reparations from the big banks of about $1.3 billion. I was there at the time. I remember it very well. And this was something that it shocked people that this was going on. Well, again, once you start to lift the cover, the veil of secrecy, you start to see really what's going on in this country. And that's very, very dangerous.
How long were you in Switzerland?
I was there for about 15 years.
That's a long time.
It's a very long time. I worked there in three different banks, from Credit Suisse to Barclays Bank to UBS, all in Geneva. I had many friends in banks, law firms, accounting firms, trust firms. This was a small, close-knit community of money people, people who managed money, invested money, attracted money, and so forth. So it was a very unusual business environment. And again, the ongoing joke was no one would bomb Switzerland because everyone's money was there.
Well, that's basically true. What were your high points, Bradley? What did you enjoy about it?
Well, I had introduced some very interesting products to the banks that were private labeled worldwide. I was very happy for that. I tried to get my colleagues to be better workers, to understand that they deserve to have more training and more development and more growth. I brought a different American mentality to the Swiss mentality. Not to say the Swiss are wrong, but it just, it came with a different attitude and a different approach, which I think was very conducive to getting people to work better. And they like that. They like my openness. They like my fairness. And I think I made a lot of friends that way. Unfortunately, when you go against the biggest bank in the world in a country like Switzerland, not many people want to stand up for that fight. So that's the problem. And it's really hard because I think a lot of people realize now what I did was not only the right thing, but it protected a lot of other people who are really exposed.
You went up the ladder of banking. Of course, you were born in Boston. You went into banking in Boston. How did you get discovered?
Well, I actually worked summers at a firm called State Street Bank in Boston, and I detail this in my book. And quite frankly, I was a whistleblower in Boston. This is what's really quite an expose with the book, because I went to the Federal Bureau of Investigation in Boston to expose the currency crimes they were committing at State Street. And the FBI buried the investigation.
There you go again, right?
Exactly. So now, fast forward, Harry Markopoulos, the one who exposed the Madoff fraud, had actually exposed the currency fraud at Bank of New York and State Street Bank. You could go check it. It's a fact. It was just a few months ago announced. I had talked about this back in 1993.
And it went right over everybody's head, or what?
Well, when you read my book, I'd be happy to follow up with you. It's a long story, but what happened was big business in bed with big government.
Yep.
Once again.
That happens. Follow the money.
Follow the money, George. And again, this is the problem that we have, and Americans don't realize every single day they're being cheated, and they have no voice. That's why whistleblowers are so important to our society. Now, some people don't like whistleblowers. I understand. But those are the ones who are breaking the law, and we have to stop it.
Absolutely. I mean, look, whistleblowers are important to our society, critical to our society, as long as what they present are things that people are doing breaking the law.
Precisely. And all you have to do is go back and look at Enron, the women that exposed Enron. They were whistleblowers. Look at the people that exposed the tobacco industry. They were whistleblowers. Look at Harry Markopoulos that exposed the Madoff. He was a whistleblower.
And a bottom line too, Bradley, if you're doing it above the law, you don't need a whistleblower.
Precisely. Exactly correct. The only people who hate whistleblowers are the ones who are breaking the law. And I think for your organization, George, and your audience, of course, if you go to my website, which is lucifersbanker.com.
Yeah, man, we've got a link for you on our website. It's all set up for you.
Well, check the news icon. And I have sent today, or actually yesterday, by FedEx, I sent my book to the President of the United States, the Attorney General, and the Secretary of State with a letter.
Did you, on my website. Did you sign them too?
Yes, I did.
Well, perfect.
And that letter, for your audience and your organization, will detail the questions I asked the president. And I asked him specifically, what are you going to do to fix these problems?
Which still exist.
Which are perpetuated, George. Not just exist, they're perpetuated.
Since this all happened, and UBS gave up 4,700 of the 19,000 accounts. Has it gotten worse or better?
Well, there's several things that have happened. Yes, it's gotten somewhat better. Money has come back into the U.S. banking system. That's true. People have paid fines and penalties, of course, and so on and so forth. But the problem is, go look at the moment I came into the Department of Justice in June of 2007. From that point forward, not only the amount of people that have come in under a voluntary disclosure program were astronomical because of me, but number two, this is the more telling point, how many people have renounced their citizenship since that year?
Really?
Now, you can go look at the numbers, and it's not my numbers. I don't put them out. The Treasury Department does.
Was that their way to get around this?
Precisely. That's just one of the ways. And wow. I tried to tell them. I said, look, you don't understand. People can come in with a second passport and say, well, I'm Greek. Forget about the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
passport. So by default, they say, oh, this person's Greek. So you would never say they're American because, oh, they don't comply with the U.S. law. No, it doesn't matter. They're Greek.
Can you believe it's been almost 9.5 years since this all started for you?
Oh, actually, a bit longer. I started whistleblowing internally in early 2005. And the problem here is not just second passports or people coming in under the program, or then people moving the monies to another person. For instance, if you had moved your money to someone who was Austrian, it's no longer a U.S. account. It's an Austrian German.
You better hope you can trust the Austrian, right?
Well, or how about putting in a safe deposit box? Would you rather pay 50% on your $10 million or take the $10 million and just put it in a safe deposit box and never come back to the U.S.?
They would let you do that?
No one questions what's in the safe deposit box, George.
That's a pretty big box for $10 million, Brad.
Well, maybe you get a couple of them.
Oh my God.
So these people are very, very smart people. They're people that are very inventive, and they can come up with ways. If they came up with ways to put it there in the first place, they're certainly going to come up with ways to do it again.
Well, and honestly, Bradley, let me ask you, the money that they hid, the money that the people hid and the corporations hid, did they really need it anyway?
Well, the operative word is need. And no, of course. Were they going to go hungry or couldn't pay their rent?
Never.
Of course not.
Never.
Because at the bank, and think about this logically for your audience, this is very important to understand. If you were wealthy enough in America to put money overseas, and again, our minimum account size was $1 million, you had to think, wait a minute, if you're okay to live in the U.S. with whatever money you had, but you still had the ability to put $1 million or $3 million or $10 million or
whatever
overseas, what's the sense? I believe, from my experience, there were several reasons to not only shield your money, not only from the tax man, but also from the next spouse or from your business partner. Or it was sexy to say, hey, I have a Swiss numbered account, and I have a nest egg over there that no one knows about, and they never will.
Greed.
Greed, precisely. So is it a need? No, it's not a need. Is it agreed? Yes, it is.
Gordon Gekko would have been proud, right?
It's one of the quotes in my book. Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
Greed is good. Let's take some calls for you. Steve in Albany, New York. Let's get us started here. Steven, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, I'm happy to be back again. Just want to note really quick that I took business administration with all those courses. I took economics, and I really have to read his book.
Oh, yeah. This is for you.
I really do. I have 8 credit hours in ECHO, so I can understand it. And, I'm hoping that he doesn't commit suicide, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean, and I think that's something that he's probably been aware of.
Yeah, but if it would be very, very,
convenient?
Not convenient is another word for it. Very suspicious. If all of a sudden he commits suicide after we say it on the radio, so this might protect him from committing suicide. The reason I called is because with all this coming out, okay, what he said about Hillary Clinton, Hillary is dragging up stuff from years and years and years and years on Trump. Why don't they do this with Hillary, okay? Why don't they put this out there? Because Trump could walk away with this.
Well, let me tell you why. And this is coming from a guy in the media who's been in it all his career. This is difficult. This is hard work for a newsman. Bradley spent years doing this. He understood it. He digested it. He lived it every day. For a media person to get involved in this in a big way to implicate someone like Hillary Clinton would take an awful amount of work. On the Trump end, however, you deal with a little sex story here and there. That's easy. Bradley, I bet that's the reason.
Well, I think that this is correct. And your caller, Steve, is very well versed here, is that we need to step back as a society and say, wait a minute, this is a complex issue, but it's not that complex. We're talking about a very simple case in which, behind the scenes, Hillary Clinton had secret negotiations with the Swiss. In effect, every American was cheated because of these secret meetings. That's number one. Number two, why would you only get 25% of the names? 4 people rob a bank in Buffalo. You get just the driver and let the other 3 people go away? they were violating our tax and securities laws for decades.
Was that a settlement to get only the 25%?
That's correct. And the only reason why we know this, George and Steve, is because WikiLeaks leaked these documents back in 2009. You can go check them. They're online. And go look at these documents that show that Hillary had to get a political solution with her counterpart in Switzerland. This is treason. I'm sorry. I'm a Democrat, but this is treason.
So what happened to the other 75% of the people or companies? Did they scramble when they realized they're safe, but, hey, someone might come after us later?
Well, call the DOJ and the State Department and find out why they made such a sweetheart deal when hardworking Americans got to pay their taxes and lose their home.
But literally, 75% of the accounts were still hidden. That's what you're saying.
Swiss bank secrecy continued to American secrecy, and they just continued it. That is correct.
Wayne in Chicago, welcome to the show. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yes, George, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Yes, I just want to say to your guest, you are a true hero, not just an American hero, but a true human being, a true hero, just like Mr. Snowden. What I want to ask you, sir, is the charges that they charged you with to take away your freedom, were these charges created out of thin air? Or were the charges already on the books that they trumped up even more just to, you know, get the revenge on you for exposing the truth? And just one more comment. Most of these United States presidents, they become treasonous even before they enter the White House. So that doesn't surprise me at all either. And thank you very much for the call.
Okay, Wayne. So what about the charges against you, Bradley?
Well, it was a one-count charge, and what's a very unusual charge in this country, I got charged with a one-count conspiracy charge. And that is this is the only country in the world that has such a charge, meaning you do not need a witness, you do not need evidence, you have to prove your innocence. So the Department of Justice, this huge mammoth organization, comes crushing down on the guy that exposes the biggest fraud. And it was clear because they don't like whistleblowers. The prosecutor in my case, Kevin Downing, who then went to a private law firm to defend people he should have prosecuted, said there was a deposition that was taken in a civil case, and the person was asked, what did Kevin Downing say? He said to the person, Birkenfeld will never get a whistleblowing award, ever. So you can see that these people at the Department of Justice are bitter civil servants who don't like whistleblowers, who, one, tell them how to do their job, who make them look foolish because they didn't uncover it, and then they get paid a large award because they did a good thing for their country. Why wouldn't you embrace that?
You would have to.
You would, and when you read my book, you'll see some of the facts behind this case is absolutely outrageous.
All right, we're going to come back in just a second, Bradley, and take final phone calls. Fast couple hours here. Bradley Birkenfeld, our special guest. Yes, he's a whistleblower. And yes, his book is called Lucifer's Banker, The Untold Story of How I Destroyed Swiss Bank Secrecy. And Bradley Birkenfeld, our special guest, will come back in a moment with final phone calls. He's the whistleblower. An amazing story indeed. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Bradley Birkenfeld with us, the whistleblower, Lucifer's banker. Now, tell me, how secure are you these days, Bradley? I mean, do you feel safe? What's your situation?
I do. I feel safe, George, and I've taken precautions, certainly. Again, I think it's important to understand that more people, more of your audience that hears this story gets so infuriated that their government is cheating them, and they understand that someone like myself has taken great risk and courage to come forward. So I think, quite frankly, a lot of people applaud what I've done. Obviously, there'll be some haters, of course, but that's fine. I think the important thing is that I did the right thing. I did the right thing for my country, and I tried to make it a better world.
Did you expect to get a reward?
No, and that's very important for your listening audience. Why it's important is I started whistleblowing in Switzerland in early 2005. The whistleblowing law by Senator Grassley from Iowa was passed in December 2006. So I had no idea there was such a law out there. This came later, once I had come forward and tried to expose this, and my attorneys had informed me that there was this law that could be possible. But that wasn't the impetus to come forward, because it didn't exist when I started my whistleblowing.
All right, back to the phones we go. Joe in the Bronx, welcome to the program, Joe.
Hey, George, how are you? How you doing, George?
Good.
I want to ask you, Guest Bradley. Now, as far as, have you ever been able to do a party affiliation demographic on the over 4,000 names that were turned over? And also, do you have a working knowledge of the fees that are charged in order to set up these Swiss bank accounts? Is it a percentage of the principal, or is there a flat fee?
Well, it's a good question. A lot of the time, to answer your first question, I don't, because we were told, quote-unquote told, that 4,700 names were given. We don't know how they were selected, who selected them, were they actually given to the government. So, again, the American public is left in the dark to their detriment. Your second part question, yes, the fees they charged because they gave them this secrecy. And again, if let's just say for the sake of argument, the highest tax bracket in the United States is 39.6. And then let's just add on a little bit more for state income tax, which is, let's say, another 5, wherever you might live. So call that 45%. If you put your money in Switzerland, there was no interest, no income tax, no capital gains tax, no inheritance tax. So in fact, if I'm charging you 2 to 3% to manage that money, I'm saving you 42%. So most clients didn't care, because they knew they were getting a numbered account in Switzerland, protected, VIP treatment. They were saving 40, 42, 45% tax, and they didn't care. And the bank charged excessive fees, and not only did they have fees on, say, portfolio management, where you manage the portfolio, they would put their own funds in the portfolio management, which is exactly what we're talking about with Wells Fargo, incentivizing people to rip off the client. But it was offshore, so the DOJ never pursued it. The SEC never pursued it. And once again, you see that this is wrong.
Did the mob deal with the bank, too?
The bank was the mob. They were doing, the mob could learn a lot from UBS. They were doing this worldwide. And in my book, you're going to see some very sad stories with respect to the biological brother of Osama bin Laden had an account there.
The biological brother of Osama bin Laden.
Yes.
And, of course, he had many brothers.
Oh, but the bank managed billions of dollars for the bin Laden family. Now, I'm not saying the bin Laden family is a bad family. They're very hardworking. They do construction. They're very well known.
They had many Saudi contracts.
But the fact of the matter is, when you have the biggest terrorist attack on our land and you don't even pursue offshore accounts at UBS in Switzerland of family members related to this man, I find that quite strange.
That is strange. That is strange.
And that's just one part of the story in my book.
Bradley, how wealthy were the heads of the bank?
Well, here's the other thing. The bank had something called undisclosed reserves. Now, anybody with a little bit of economics or accounting understand that there's no such thing in the civilized world. But in Switzerland, they had this little piggy bank within the bank that no one knew how much money was in it.
And what did they use the piggy bank for?
God only knows. If there was a write-off, they would just put their money in this cookie jar and pay it off. Or they would pay salaries, or maybe they would pay people offshore.
Or a little bonus here and there?
Exactly. A lot of politicians were hired by the bank. And
could you buy a president through the bank?
Well, let's put it this way. We just all remember Iran-Contra and General Secord wiring money to Swiss bank accounts.
Yeah.
And that was all in Senate testimony.
My first knowledge of Swiss bank accounts were from the James Bond movies.
Well, we talk about that in the book as well. And I think it's important to understand, when you go back, like I told you, the Thomas Crown Affair from 1968.
Right.
Your audience should go see it. It's a fantastic movie, a true story. But I think the more important thing here is, when I started to do an interview with a gentleman by the name of Michael Broner, We were threatened by the station chief, the CIA station chief in Baghdad.
Like,
why?
Threatened with life and death?
Threatened us not to report on this one client that I was exposing.
Or?
He said, don't go after this guy. Hamad Karzai is more corrupt.
Wow.
And that person, his index card of his numbered accounts, which totaled over $400 million, I gave to the DOJ. They did nothing about it.
Jeez. And I'm sure Karzai, who we installed in Afghanistan from his days at Unocal, the oil company, I'm sure he's pretty well off too, isn't he?
Well, this is it. Exactly. But here's the problem. The CIA has bungled more operations overseas. And remember when Saddam Hussein got caught? They caught him with steam trunks full of dollars.
Yes.
The wraps around those dollars were UBS wraps.
His biggest mistake was he should have played ball with us.
Correct.
He'd still be there.
He went into Kuwait, and he pissed off a lot of people. So then the U.S. government then went after him. But he was on the payroll of the CIA.
Unbelievable.
And then all of a sudden, the same with Osama bin Laden.
Bin Laden was a CIA asset before he did what he did with us, that's for sure.
Precisely. So what does that tell you about our society? What does that say about all the money we waste and all these secret deals that go sour and people die? Why? We have to stop this nonsense.
Greg in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Greg, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Awesome show, George. So I've been listening to you since the early 1990s and been following politics since the mid to late 80s. And Bradley, if you could correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like what you're describing, and believe me, I believe every word that you've said so far tonight, are you not describing what's been called like the government media complex, the government industrial complex, and these global initiatives that were started back, I guess, in the 80s, maybe probably before that, but they sort of came to light then. And that money being siphoned out of our economy, you know, taking our investment money and job creation and everything that goes along with our economy, it sounds to me like it's much, much bigger than what you can even describe. And the tentacles of this thing spread worldwide, and they literally can destroy anyone they want to destroy, discredit anyone they want to discredit, which I'm sure there'll be, you know, voices discrediting you as well as they discredit Donald Trump. And is Donald Trump, although he's probably just scratching the surface, is he accurate in describing the criminal activity of the Democrat Party, Hillary Clinton, and the Obama administration? Thanks for taking my call.
Well, it's a great question, and I think the problem is if we don't have accountability and transparency, people don't know what's going on. That's the first problem. The second problem is they try to dumb down the American people, which they're not dumb. The American people ask questions, they want more information, but quite frankly, and I witnessed this with 60 Minutes, I gave them a lot of this information, and instead of them airing the information, they put on the Assistant Attorney General, Thomas Pirelli, to placate 60 Minutes. So I find 60 Minutes a farce. They fix the information, they cut out things I gave them. I told them specifically, I said, the DOJ, Kevin Downey told me he was not interested in non-Americans. I said, why don't you go, Steve Croft, and talk to the 3,000 family members who had their loved ones murdered on 9/11 and ask them if they care? Because I'm sure they would, because the DOJ said they didn't care.
Well, I got to tell you, brother, when this thing unfolded for you, it sounds like you got or stumbled into more and more information. Did you or did you not?
Well, this is exactly right, George. And I think, you know, to look at your show called Coast to Coast, I think you should rename it Country to Country, because what we're talking about here is a worldwide epidemic of corruption and fraud, and the American people are tired of this. And what I came across was something that was bigger than life, And it still is today, and we're still seeing the ramifications of this. Other countries are asking me to help them. Canada, Germany, France, Norway, India, Greece, and so on.
They all want their money, don't they?
Well, they've been cheated. Who wouldn't want if they got cheated? And this is the point, whether it's an ex-business partner, a spouse, a tax, a government tax authority. Why? But then, what if we have illegal acts going on? As I said, we don't have accountability and transparency. We've got a problem.
Yeah, we do. Well, I've got to ask you, how opulent are their headquarters, the bank's headquarters?
Look at it this way. Their offices are worldwide, number one. And you can go in the States, and they bought Payne Webber, and they have offices all over this country.
They're everywhere, sure.
But in Zurich, we had offshore events that were so luxurious. We had VIP events around the world I could go to at any time. Car shows, art shows, wine tastings, Formula One, Super Bowls, whatever. Because not only the domestic market had it covered, but then the guys like myself in Switzerland used to come in and market. I have the PowerPoint presentations to prove it. I've told governments about it. They are very interested in my information, and I'll do it for free. I'm happy to help any government that wants to work with me, and I'll do it for free.
Any chance of your story becoming a movie?
I've been approached on several fronts in this regard. TV series, movies, I do lecture, and I want to get my story out. I want people to understand they've been cheated by their government. It's wrong. And I think the main thing is the book, the website will hopefully parlay into something bigger so people can understand how big a story this is.
Did the UBS Bank have anything to do with the Union Bank, which Prescott Bush was part of during the Nazi era?
Well, remember, there were three big banks. I'm not sure about those connections. That was long before I was alive. But there was a lot of nefarious acts going on with these banks years ago. And you're going to see some names come out on some of the people that kept monies in these banks. And I think the problem is that these Swiss banks, quite frankly, look at what where the money went to Iran recently on a private jet. That jet took off from Geneva, Switzerland. Why is it that we're using a private jet out of Geneva, Switzerland to deliver hundreds of millions of dollars to Iran?
Cash.
Yeah. Look, you can't even go to an ATM machine and take out $300.
You can barely go to your bank to take out a lot of cash these days. You have to call ahead, and two, if you don't, they will generally tell you, especially on a Friday, Bradley, if you go to the bank and say, hey, I want $1,500, they may not have it.
That's correct. And the other problem is, why are we having jets, private jets, at taxpayer expense going to Switzerland? What is the U.S. government doing in Switzerland after these banks cheated us, cheated the government, cheated the taxpayers? This is outlandish.
Dina in Riverside, California now. Go ahead, Dina.
Hi, thanks. Sure. George, I have the perfect guest. Oh, I have you on the line for your show. It's Bill Weiss, and he has a book, 23 Minutes in Hell, and it's a true story how he lived.
Send me a quick email if you would, but go ahead, Dina. We're almost out of time, but definitely email me that.
Okay. Just remember 23 Minutes in Hell if I don't get through on the email. Okay. I wanted to ask your guest. You know, no matter what they say about the Democrats and Hillary Clinton, the worst thing in the world would be for the KKK-backed person to get in. I want to know if he has any information on the 50 members of Congress who were exposed to be in the KKK, and they covered up the names being let out. To me, I don't care if Hillary robbed the Fort Knox. The worst thing in the world would be open the door for the KKK to get in, like they're killing blacks and Mexicans.
Well, we definitely don't want the KKK in, but I think that's out of your bailiwick, Bradley.
Well, it's a little bit outside the realm of what we're discussing, and I understand your caller's concerns, and they're valid. We don't want any of that happening in this country. But the problem we have in this country with UBS is another problem. There was something called PEPs. Politically exposed people. It was an ultra-secret office in Zurich that dealt directly with Washington. Now, this office, we haven't seen one one person in the government indicted for having an account because they put an amnesty program in place. Not one, two, not two, three of them. So people could come in, pay a percentage of their fine, and be anonymous. So all that does is it's a continuation of Swiss bank secrecy. This is wrong.
It's dead wrong, if you know dead what wrong. I mean.
Exactly, George. And the American people are tired. They're tired of getting lied to. They're tired of hearing these stories. They're tired of having things buried. That's why someone like me as a whistleblower can come out and say, fine, you want to challenge me? I got 104 million reasons why I'm right and the DOJ's wrong.
Bradley's website, lucifersbanker.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. His book is getting announced tomorrow at a private function in D.C., but you can find it on Amazon, Lucifer's Banker, and bookstores as well. Bradley, come back and definitely be safe, okay?
Thank you so much, George, and God bless to all your listeners.
There we go with a national release of Lucifer's Banker. Up next, we're going live to the United Kingdom because it's time to get a little spooky. We'll be back.